This painting, this painting, engaged in a marriage that endured for about 10 years. During that period of time, they had two children. Prior to marrying Mrs. Painting, Mr. Painting had a sole occupation of taking care of his separate property, mowing the grass, replacing broken windows, doing what he could, hiring other people to do what he could do that were crafts that he didn't understand. He owned about 20 houses. He met Mrs. Pennick and they married, and they continued to do the same thing. Mowing grass, collecting rent, paying more bills, fixing the broken glass, and calling the plumber when he couldn't fix it. In that period of time, everything was nice, and economic conditions were better, and the marriage was friendly. Mr. Pennick's houses were what we would probably call a football way to get into the real estate business. They've been mowed on small equities, and virtually no or some down payments made, and over a period of time, he acquired and got into this business. He continued to do the same thing, and as a result of having some income from these, he was able to buy two community houses and pay down on them and make monthly payments. So later, things even got a little better, and they were able to acquire a community house to live in. Before that, they had lived in one of these rent houses. During this whole time, each year they filed an income tax, and they did the usual things that the Internal Revenue Code allowed, until the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 changed a little bit. That was to take all the necessary expenses of taking care of all of this property, to take the depreciation on it, pay taxes, insurance, water bill if necessary, mortgage payments that were required to be paid, we didn't have a house anymore, and continued on. At divorce time, Ms. Pennick had by that time got a couple of gifts from his mother, a tune of probably about $80,000, which was donated to the community. He's not quite made famous because economic conditions were getting bad. So he had to sell two pieces of property to get some more money to continue to support the community. At time of divorce, and this was a bench trial, heard by most experienced and learned trial judge in Harris County. The property was all developed on individual inventories of the petitioner and the respondent. The certainly they had a right to us one thing or another, finally got around and the parties finally, for some reason or other, stipulated that $104,500 had been paid on the principal on the separate property of the respondent, in that case, in the petitioner here. that's the way had Mrs. Penny certainly asked that the community be reimbursed for that. The able trial judge had heard all this, man experienced in the ways of the world and what was really happening in the real world. And he, after dividing the thing and taking into consideration that all these considerations were there, and all the debits and credits were there, that Mrs. Penny or the community would not receive $104,500 dollar for dollar reimbursement to the community for payments made on the separate mortgage reduction of the respondent in that case. that, of course, caused some difficulty, and there were complaints made about it, and finding the facts and conclusions of law requested and filed. In this case, the trial judge was never given any opinion to change his mind if he would have been alluded to it, because nobody asked for a new trial or to present anything to the trial judge that he could have made a mistake. I think as able trial judges, practicing attorneys, we use the field that trial judge should have one shot at reconsidering his opinion. Case appealed to the 14th Court in Houston. And the court came down with an opinion that the community should be reimbursed dollar for dollar, $104,500, for the payments made on the separate property of Mr. Pinney. And cited generally a case called Prusky versus Prusky. Mr. Pinney is in a unique position, probably, as I have been unable to find in the Texas law, a case like this. I've been able to find a case where they specifically talk about what happened to a person when the depreciation was taken off of their property. We're all familiar with the rule that if you own income-producing property, you can take depreciation. We're also familiar with the rule that when that property is sold, depreciation has to be recaptured. A rent house is a consumable asset, maybe like a gold mine. And if it's put on either 30 or 40 years, or if it is highly consumable when you bought it, maybe 20-year depreciation schedule, that asset is pretty well gone. And in 10 years, if it was on a 20-year schedule, it was half as close. No case that I've found has ever said that anybody really ever considered that. Presty case didn't really say much about that. Mr. and Mrs. Presty were getting a divorce, and Mr. Presty owned a little piece of property, and some improvements had been made on it, and some payments on the reduction of the mortgage principal had been made. Presty finally ended up by just blandly saying that the community was entitled to some reimbursement for a reduction in mortgage and improvements. It would seem like that if this community, in this case, was entitled to $504,500 for reimbursement, that we would totally disregard the position of the other individual in the community. The asset is diminished in value, partially destroyed if we consider depreciation as the government's way to go about to want to make entrepreneurs out of most Americans. And if that be the case, we would have something that would amount to a double dip. Number one, the community would consume the depreciation schedule, which is real income on the income tax every year. It's real money, it's just ending. But the individual who owned that piece of property would be left with anywhere from a fourth to a half consumed piece of property. In this particular case also, the able trial judge said, well, if there was any problems in income taxes in the past, why, we'll certainly make Mr. Pinney responsible for that, which conceivably left him with other problems, because apparently in people trying to run a small rental business are exposed to a great number of vicissitudes with the Internal Revenue Service concerning what is a depreciation item and what is a capitalization item. And if you talk about a capitalization item of putting a roof on and taking it as a depreciation, you're left with an income tax problem. Who knows whether you repair the roof or whether you replace the roof. Anyway, that was a position that Mr. Pinney and all people who own income-producing property would be left with. The trial judge in a case like this hears the evidence. If it's a trial judge like we have that hears 25 or 30 cases a day, and he tries seriously, maybe one or two of them, and sometimes even faced with a case like this where you have voluminous schedules and things to spend a lot of time against us. Certainly, in the real world, and really what's happening, the trial judge is familiar with what's happening around him. He knows whether or not his rent house is getting rent. He knows whether his taxes are going up. He knows whether the general economics in the community are on a down plunge. While we're talking about general economics, if we're on a downside and a divorce is granted to somebody, and the community is allowed a reimbursement of $104,500, and the total of the property reduction during the marriage has been 25% or 30%, a dramatic thing happens. Something that no one has ever really addressed, as I see in any case that I've read. What happens to the person that's left with his half-consumed property on his depreciation schedule with an outstanding obligation to pay a debt and the downstream in the economics that has left his property at a 25% or 30% less value? If the community was entitled to be reimbursed for $104,500, where would he get the money? Because the property now very possibly could not sell for the amount of indebtedness left against him.
What is the property it has in value, Steve?
Well, all of the property here, Judge Gonzalez, have depreciated.
I understand that, but the market value, let's say we now have a depressed market, we had a factual situation where the real estate market was healthy, it was not soft like today, and the property in effect would bring more money than was paid for or was owed.
I consider that too, because in the real life, we have some ups and we have some downs. And I think when a trial judge exercises his discretion, he's very familiar with the ups and the downs, because he lives in it every day. He's not like the lawyer who tries one case. His attention is focused on something. His attention is focused on the whole atmosphere. And as I say it, he has that when he exercises his discretion. If this particular case was to be the law as set down by the 14th court, we'd have one more case where a trial judge would have less discretion. 3.63 of the Texas Family Code gives the trial judge unlimited right to divide the estate of the parties in a manner that he considers just and right, giving attention to their circumstances and the children of the marriage, if any. It would seem like if he's charged with that duty, and we've always talked about in reimbursement that it's an equitable consideration to be considered by the trial judge. If we take that equitable consideration to be considered by the trial judge and say we are going to elevate it and we're going to make it a rule of law, that we're going to start out that you divide the property and then you give the community a reimbursement equal to the amount that the separate mortgages have been reduced. That has completely bit into 3.63 and changed what the legislator wanted to happen in this case, where the trial judge, who was apprised of everything in the trial, would make a decision. That would, to me, seem like we invade the province one more time of the trial judge, we exercise out what the legislature gave him by a rule of law and say he has less discretion because he is unable to consider the benefits that accrue to this estate. We talk all the time about let's go consider benefits and reimbursement of application of money to unpaid mortgages on the property, which is separate to the spouse's claim. Well, I think that everybody in the real world understands that in a case like the Penny case or any other case, and the only case I can see that we get away from it, where we don't impinge on what the legislature said, and we don't impinge on the trial judge, is where we have one house that belongs to either husband or wife out of a former marriage. And they move in and they live in it. And so their mortgage payments are $350 a month, and somebody comes up and says, but the rental value is only, let's give the community $150 as reimbursement. I think in the real world, everybody would say that didn't make any sense. And in the real world, it wouldn't make any sense to me to say that a person who goes into a marriage knowing exactly what the two spouses are doing, and there's no change, we're not talking about Jensen or Malone or anything, we're just talking about our man. He's renting out his 20 houses. When he gets in, he's renting out his 15 houses when he gets out. If the 14th court was burned in this thing, we do those things. Practically everyone on this court has been a trial judge. We have been on trial judges right to exercise his discretion, because without in that, if this be a rule of law and not a discretionary idea, we've elevated up what we talk about almost always in reimbursement, which is an equitable facet of the law. And almost everybody, in every case I've ever seen, when they talk about reimbursement, they talk about equity. And when they talk about equity, they say it's not an interest in property, it's not a right to property. So it would appear that all the writers have always said that we're talking about an equitable consideration. And all of our trial judges are sitting on beds with two hats on, a law hat and an equity hat. And we all know that they exercise them fairly with their discretion. If that might be true, there's a complaint that there's been an abuse of their discretion. But I would submit that we have got to apply a benefit case in a case like this or any other case. And I submit that every trial judge in this state weighs the benefits to the community against the benefits to the separate estate. And it's done by a mental process, or a new trial judge right down on the yellow pad.
Counsel, in this case, value of the properties declined.
Are going down in economically.
Right. So I understand your argument for your client. Suppose the property values had doubled. Would you make the same argument?
Well, I've been in the real estate business myself for 35 years and I haven't found it double yet, but if it did.
Well, let's don't talk about personal experiences. I'm just proposing the hypothetical. If it did.
If it did, Judge, it would seem like to me that we're still talking about the same thing. We're still talking about the same depreciation. We're still talking about the consuming of what we have, even though the land has, let's say, increased in value, because we don't want to lose sight of the fact that what the United States government requires is which this landowner is going to pick up. And we don't always have capital gains. But anyway, he's going to pick up, if he gets an increase, he's going to pay the cost on it. If he has taken this depreciation over the years on this consumable asset, which is his house, he then has to pick that up as an item that he's already received credit for, reimburse the government for that. So as I see it, it really don't make this much difference down or this much difference up, because the trial judge is considering that at that time. He's in the real world and he knows it's going up, and I think if it went up at one place, we had one place where somebody acquired a corner that became so valuable that somebody wanted it at an inordinately valuable price, and they took it. An able trial judge knows what happened because he has inventories in front of him in which all of these properties are valuable. He immediately applies his discretion and the Texas Family Code of 3.63 to it and makes his decision based on that. And I think that's fair. That's what a trial judge does. And I think that's what this trial judge does. So up or down, the trial judge considered it because he had to buy it at the time he decided it on an inventory. And if it wasn't right, our trial judges say, we're going to get back. Was that the answer to the question, or did I leave some out?
You did fine.
Whatever it was, what we're really talking about is something that you will not find, I think, in any case that I've been able to read on this area. Presley doesn't mention anything about depreciation. You don't hear anything in Horlock, you don't hear much in Malone, you don't hear very much in Hilton, you don't hear anything in Villarreal or Nelson. Because they were all cases that I don't think it was even mentioned. I don't think the trial judge even called about it. Apparently the lawyers didn't pay any attention to it. These courts have reversed many cases when they say that the courts didn't pay any attention to tax consequences. Here you have a real tax consequence. A real one. Because you've got recapture of depreciation number one. Over here you've got number two, a possibility of a lot of tax due because of a inability to distinguish between capital improvement and ordinary repairs. So, in my world, a person is left in a quandary as to what each one of them is, and at any time you can have a huge problem with that. I feel like the 14th Court, if they bottomed, as they said they did, their decision on Preston, didn't have any of the things that are right in the middle of thinking. Since they didn't have them, apparently they weren't able to consider them. But the judge said he considered them. The trial judge said, I considered all of those items. And if he considered them, he came up with what I call was the right and just, under the circumstances, given due consideration to any children of marriage. He knew what was happening. He did it. If this be the law, I'll say that every trial judge in the state of Texas will be deprived of his discretion in a family law case. 3.63 probably would not be the total law as decided by the Texas legislature, but it would be something else. And I don't think people have really focused in on the fact that we have trial judges who have given, every court gives them unlimited discretion unless they just go too far and abuse it. And I find by far and by large, in a case of this kind, that they don't abuse their discretion.
Any questions?
No questions. That's all I have on that question right now.
We are now ready to hear argument from respondents.
Mr. Rogers, may I please report, Mr. Rogers will present argument for respondents.
May it please the court, I'm Don Rogers from Harris County. I represent Maria Penick, the respondent in this case. The record in this case shows that these parties originally married each other sometime prior to March 13, 1975. They divorced, then remarried within roughly a year of that period. A lot of Mr. Penick's property became separate as of the first divorce or in the interim between the parties remarried. And I would like to talk with you a little about the equities of this situation. At the trial, the parties entered into an agreed stipulation, which was introduced into evidence and appears in the record. It reflected that Mr. Penick had 18 pieces of separate real property with a net market value after taking all the debt out of roughly $725,000. Out of this separate property, the community estate paid $104,500 by stipulation to reduce the principal debt on Mr. Penick's separate real estate.
I think you're asking the same question. Go ahead.
I was going to ask how much of that debt reduction was a result of the income from the property?
Well, most of Mr. Penick's income came from his brother's property.
And what was the total debt?
The total debt at the time of the divorce or...
At the time of this decree that $104,000 was ordered to apply to.
The only figures I have, if you look at the stipulation which is in the record, it has the data for each piece of property.
I don't have the total figured out right now.
But the net, after reducing all that debt on the 18 pieces of separate property, the net value that Mr. Penick stipulated to at the trial came to roughly $725,000. Now, the value of the community real estate, on the other hand, was less than $200,000. Mrs. Pennick, at the time of the trial, pled for reimbursement, seeking reimbursement for the principal debt reduction only due to the fact that Mr. Pennick, the income from Mr. Pennick's separate property, had benefited the community of service. In other words, she did not ask for interest, taxes, or insurance due to the fact that there was a benefit to the community. And if you review the Nelson case, which is cited in the brief that I filed with this court as well as with the 14th court, it discusses that pretty clearly as to how this particular theory of reimbursement is construed. And I'll just give you a brief quote from what Nelson said about it. It says, if the case is one in which community funds were used as purchase money as opposed to one in which community funds are expended for improvement, then the cases of Hawkins and Wilson over before the community can be reimbursed for payments for interest, taxes, and insurance, it may offset by the benefits to the community. However, payments on the principal are not required in any such an offset. Now, this court has previously recognized this theory in the case of Colvin versus Alexander, which is cited in the brief. And this court in that case, now that was a probate case, but they did distinguish the community property aspects of the claim made in probate. And the court stated, of course, where the husband purchases land on credit before marriage and pays the purchase money debt after marriage out of community funds, equity requires that the community estate be reimbursed. Now, what Mr. Lindsay is suggesting to you is somewhat novel and that no court has considered the effect of depreciation. And certainly the depreciation, as far as tax purposes, may have reduced the taxes that the party is liable for and thereby benefited the estate. But this really gets back to the notion of an offset for income producing expense. And by not asking for reimbursement for interest, taxes, and insurance, and so forth, I think that Mrs. Pennick, in fact, recognized that there was a benefit to the community because of the separate property and took that into account. Now, what Mr. Lindsay is suggesting is, anytime there's income-producing property, if a depreciation deduction is taken, then there shouldn't be any reimbursement. I would suggest to you, reviewing all the cases on the subject, and particularly the facts of this case, the vast disproportionate values of Mr. Pennick's separate estate versus the community estate in this case, the fact that the record showed that Mrs. Pennick, on the other hand, had very little separate property, to not allow reimbursement or require reimbursement in this case would unjustly enrich Mr. Pennick. My own disagreement with the decision of the 14th Court of Appeals.
Counsel, let me, before you move on this, on the unjust enrichment argument, most, if not all, of the income to the community was from the rental property, separate rental property, was it not?
That's correct.
So how could there be unjust enrichment if his own separate property is contributing to the community? And that's your sole source of income.
Well, his separate property is not what was contributed to the community. It was the income,
well,
which was the community income.
I understand it's community income, but the source is from the separate property. I'm just trying to get my own mind, how can that be a disenrichment, even though the income is community, but the source that emanated those community funds was separate property.
Well, if you viewed Mrs. Pennick's share of the community property, which Mr. Pennick's income would be, in effect, if you took $104,000 and cut it in half, then $52,500 of Ms. Pennick's money went to pay off the debt on Mr. Pennick's property.
So your argument then is that the court, trial court, abused of discretion?
Yes, sir. And the Court of Appeals agreed with it.
But of course, she got some benefit from the money that was not put back into the rent houses. I mean, it was community income, and it was more than $104,000 over the years that they were married. So she did, in fact, get the benefit of living expenses, travel expenses, whatever else the remainder of the community funds were spent for, didn't you?
Yes, sir. In the sense that that was income, it was a part of it.
Well, I'm having a little, on another aspect of it, I'm having a little problem that if $104,000 was put into the rental property and it didn't enhance the value of that property, would she be entitled to that?
I think she'd be entitled to the same amount, and that's fair.
Let's suppose that they put $104,000 in, and as I think opposing counsel has indicated, the value of the property, not including depreciation, drops anyway because of the market, so that the property is worth a lot less. You still say that she's entitled to half of all that, the $104,000.
I think she's entitled to half of what the community paid to reduce the debt on this property. Yes.
She gets all the benefits and none of the liabilities then.
Well, had there been no benefit to her, the other case law that's all discussed here indicates that she would then not only be entitled to the debt reduction itself, but also the interest, taxes, insurance, or any other expenses that Mr. Fennick may have put into the property. For example, that might be if he owned a vacant lot and there was $50,000 down. During the marriage, she paid about $25,000. But the proof of the trial showed that they never used the vacant lot for any community purpose. It was just being held by him as an investment. And under those facts, she would be entitled, based on these cases, to go after interest, taxes, and things of that nature as well as the actual principal reduction. But here, since the community did benefit from the income on the property, she only sought the reduction of actual principal. And under that theory, I think whether it enhanced in value or not, she'd still be entitled to what actually paid off to purchase money down.
Well, if all of the all the houses burned and there was no insurance on them, she'd still be entitled to $52,000, half of the $100,000.
I think that's correct. The only disagreement I have with the opinion of the 14th Court, I feel like under these facts they should have rendered judgment. They chose not to based on two cases from this court, but that would be my only disagreement with their opinion. Here the court divided the parties' property largely based on the stipulation of evidence. The personal property was nearly divided completely by agreement. Here, I don't see any useful benefit that would result from requiring complete new property division where the only real issue is whether Mrs. Bennett's going to get her share of the community funds on the reimbursement question. If there are no more questions, that's all that I have to say.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
The answer to part of that is that $149,000 worth of depreciation was taken. In my mind, when you take $149,000 and you add it on to your income, you've done something dramatic. And that's what really happened in this case. Now we want to turn around and say what we want to do is to give the community $104,500 back, which defies logic to me, defies what I see every day in my life as to perhaps something that you read in statistics which can prove either side of the case. There's no question about that this community lived on these houses. The record would say that at least 90% of the total income to the community was from the separate land houses of the petitioner here. Hey, Jordan, with that income, they bought a home. They bought two rent houses. They bought cars. Mr. Penny even thought he could build a sailboat. I'd build one. Somebody said a sailboat was worth $10,000, so Marines were there, says it's probably worth $350,000, anyway. What I'm really talking about is, in this case, the bottom line in this whole case is, do we take the trial judge's discretion away from him and we leave it with him. Do we consider any benefit at all from separate property, or do we exercise it out?
Counsel, the one case on the books that argues for the unfettered discretion of the trial court is Murph versus Murph, that I wrote. In this case, the trial court says the husband got $725,000 in separate property. So I'm going to say that this $104,000, that the community is to be reimbursed for that, of which the husband gets half and the wife gets half. Is that basically right?
I don't think so. I think what's basically right is that the community don't get any of this $104,000.
No, I didn't ask you if it was right. That's the wrong question. Was what I said correct about the facts? $725,000 net value of the separate property. Did you quarrel with that figure?
No, I'm not going to quarrel with that.
What about the $104,000, which is paid to reimburse the community estate, would then be divided 50-50, wouldn't it?
If that was your decision.
No, I'm talking about what the trial court did.
Well, the trial court didn't do that then.
What did he do? That's what I'm asking.
What he did is he said that after considering the equities in this case, everything from where he sat, that the benefits to the community estate far exceeded any interest in that community reimbursement to the community for the $104,500 that the principal on the mortgages was reduced. That's what Judge Tate said.
So he didn't give her anything out of the $104,000?
He applied his equitable consideration to it, Your Honor, and said equity does not require reimbursement in this case.
The wife did not receive anything
out of $104,000. She had already received $149,000 worth of depreciation to the community. Since these people had no way to get any money except community money, all of the money from all of this property went to pay all of the expenses of the community for 10 years.
Well, sir, what was wrong with what the Court of Appeals said? Didn't they decide that the $104,500 was a community asset, that was community money spent on a separate estate? And then didn't it end up with that the trial court is reversed and the case is remanded so that the trial judge may determine a proper division to be made of this community asset of $104,000? He didn't split it 50-50. Didn't that leave some room for balancing the equities?
No, Your Honor, that don't leave any room for balancing at all. Because there isn't anywhere to get $52,000. The community estate in this amounted to a homestead and two rent houses. Now we'll get down to what the trial judge did. Trial judge set two rent houses that belonged to the community side to pay attorney's fees. So that's gone. Wife has got the homestead. She had that. There's nothing left unless you impress a lien on this property that's already got a great number of liens on it to get $52,500 from Mrs. Penny. And I say what that did, what the 14th Court did, is it took away the discretion of the trial judge because he wouldn't have anything left. He just had to come up and impress a lien on Mr. Penny for $52,000.
What's wrong with that?
There's a whole lot wrong with it, Your Honor, because this community has been fully reimbursed for ever since it was done. This community enjoyed all of the separate property, not only just the rental property, not only just the reduction in the mortgage payments, but the sale of two houses, some 80-some-odd $1,000 in gifts for Mr. Penny, from his mother. It was all consumed for the community, and I say that the community benefited greatly from what happened here. Now to say, in the final analysis, that in a case like this, we get a dollar-for-dollar reduction, and the community has to be paid back a dollar-for-dollar for the reduction in the principal over on the mortgages on their separate property. That's wrong, because they just completely neglected looking at least three things. They didn't pay attention to $149,000 worth of depreciation that the community had already spent. They didn't pay any attention to the fact that this had some houses that are anywhere from a fourth to a half consumed. Didn't pay any attention to the fact that when he sells them, he recaptures all that $149,000 through the Internal Revenue Code. None of those considerations were had any attention. And I'll say that is where the court was wrong in not considering that. They didn't even consider the tax consequences of what they were saying.
As I understand the Court of Appeals' opinion, it's going to go back to the trial court for that. Those considerations, and the trial court can make the exact decision that they initially.
That's what
after they articulate, as I read the Court of Appeals' opinion, articulate some of the reasons for doing it.
That's what they say, Judge. But I'm telling them that, from my opinion, down the ground where I stand, if all you've got is a quart of water and you've got to march 100 miles, if somebody takes half of it away from you, she's not going to get the 100 miles. Mr. Penny.
What's wrong with selling one of those 18 houses to pay for this?
Well, it could be done, but I say it's wrong. It's not what 3.63 considered. It takes away the discretion of the trial judge who's already decided this case on good principles of equity and all these other cases that have been talked about. Not even one of them have ever mentioned the fact of the taxes and the depreciation that was taken by these people in those cases. They ignored it.
May we're not communicating. As I read the Court of Appeals' opinion, they're asking the trial court to articulate the reasons for his actions. And they're not saying do it over or this is not right. But that is your decision that, isn't that the way you read the Court of Appeals' opinion?
I don't think it is, Your Honor. I think they said that we first you're going to give the community a dollar for dollar return for the reduction in the amount of the principal on those things. On those mortgages. That's what they really said. Then they said, you figure out how to get it, Mr. Trial Judge. Mr. Trial Judge can't get it because it isn't there, because this community has already consumed well above that. And the 14th Court didn't address the fact that this community had consumed $149,000 worth of depreciation. Didn't even consider it. Didn't even consider the fact that these properties were taxable half or a quarter depreciated, and didn't pay any attention to the fact that there was an outstanding contingent liability if there was anything done wrong in the income taxes for 10 years that this man would still be responsible for. So that's where the trial judge, can you imagine being the trial judge trying to get $52,500 where there's no money except just to order a person to sell his more separate property when he's already sold two.
Could the trial judge order him to divest himself of separate?
He didn't order him to do anything, but if this goes back, that's what he's going to have to do to get $52,000, Judge.
I thought there was a prohibition on ordering a party to sell his separate property.
Well, that's from the ground where I stand, Judge, is what happened. Where the court stands, we'd impose some sort of equitable lien that would require him to produce the money. So there's a difference in the semantics, but the end result is down here where I'm standing. He sells his property to get $52,250.
Mr. Lindsay, I read the Court of Civil Appeals' opinion the same way you did. In effect, what you're saying is that this will force dollar-for-dollar reimbursement without any offsetting credits that the community received. Is that not correct?
That's exactly what the court said in their opinion. You can read it 14 or 15 times, or about maybe 50 or 60 times, because I couldn't believe it. I still don't believe it. That's why this court needs to decide something that would take this inequity out, that would take an equitable consideration and immediately elevate it up to the consideration of a rule of law and deprive the trial judge of his discretion.
Let me see if I can state the issue and see if you agree with the issue. Is a separate estate entitled to offset when the community is reimbursed for its contributions to one spouse's separate property? Is that the issue in the case?
The community is entitled, but very little, I think, Judge Gilgarden, has been said about all the nuances of what items go to offset it, or as you call it, benefits, or whatever you call it. But the real bottom line, as I see it, is we get the money in and we spend it, and we end up with a result where there's no question in anybody's mind that each one of these mortgages has had to be paid on every month, or it wouldn't exist anymore. And as that was done, the community is using and getting entitled to this community money that came from the rents to do it. Since Mr. Pennick had no way, unless he went out and stood on the corner and asked somebody to give him some money, did he have any way to pay these mortgages other through the rental income. That was true. And that was every dollar, community dollars. And I think that the trial judge was entitled to consider what benefits those community dollars did for the community and where to place them in the hierarchy of do you get reimbursed for it as an equitable consideration, or do you get reimbursed for it as an elevated consideration as a rule of law? And I think that took the seat out of the trial judge's hand. And in this case, if this case is affirmed, it requires the trial judge to go back and get $52,500 out of one of Mr. Payne's separate houses. That's the only place it is. So what it means is that we say, sell your separate real estate and pay for the reduction in this mortgage. But I said, the benefits were manifold to the community. The community was not cheated, wasn't shorted in any way. Nobody was changed position. In 10 years, nobody changed position. Mr. Pink was renting a house, cutting grass, replacing windows, just like he had on the day he met him. He didn't get any other businesses. He didn't do any better. His business was actually getting worse because of the economics. But nobody has been really deprived and defrauded and taken away from him in this whole case. And I say that the trial judge's discretion was properly exercised in this case when he decided all of the issues in it and decided that equity did not require that the community receive $104,500. And the real bottom line of that is he couldn't go back and say, well, we're going to give the community $104,500. Now we're going to charge the community $149,000 that they took as depreciation. We're going to refigure all of the properties back and find out what the end result is, because he couldn't do that, because the United States government has preempted that treaty. All he could do is say that in equity, he had done what was right and just for Mr. and Mrs. Pennick with due regard to the two children. And all I can say in the whole case is we either let the trial judge on the 3.63 of the Family Code continue to exercise his discretion, or we elevate a new rule of law and now make, instead of equity and reimbursement, we say that all sons in the state of Texas that apply to a mortgage, no matter what the benefits are to anybody, are ipso facto entitled to dollar-for-dollar reimbursement to the community.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Judge.
The court will take another recess.
Yeah, you can do right.